It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Paul is at home. Mary Jo's at TechEd. We've got everything that happened at TechEd. Plus, we'll talk about that new Xbox news, the Kinect detachment, all coming up next. It's a Kinectomy, I think they call it, on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 362, recorded May 14th, 2014. Xbox on-prem. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want when you want with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit Lynda.com/Windows. That's LYNDA.com/Windows. And by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device for 30% off the lifetime of your account. Go to itpro.tv/ww and use the offer code WW30. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the microphone, and enter Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers your Windows weekly, and here they are, the pair. First of all, let's say hello to Mary Jo Foley, who is in Houston at TechEd.
I am.
Mary is the author of All About Microsoft, the ZDNet blog All About Microsoft, and are you in a hotel ballroom or something?
I'm right next to the convention center in an undisclosed location. Yeah.
I think the crappy art gives it away.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It looks like you're about to hold a board meeting.
Yeah, exactly. The sconces on the wall. Well, good. We're going to find out all about it. And I like the hoodie. I guess you're freezing.
Oh, yeah. I'm wearing my new TWiT hoodie.
Yeah, it looks good.
Awesome.
Glad you have that.
I know. It's so cold in here. Ooh.
The irony is that Houston is the worst, most muggy hellhole this time of year, but I guess they air-conditioned the way out of it.
Yeah, and today, for some reason, is in the 60s.
Yeah, oh.
And still blasting the air
conditioning. Oh, of course. Can't turn it off.
No.
It's not until October 1st.
Yeah. That guy is not in Houston. That's Mr. Paul Thurrott. He is the host at All About, I'm sorry, at Win, I almost said All About Android.
At All About WinSuperSite.
All About WinSuperSite. The supersite for Windows, WinSuperSite.com. He's also an analyst for Penton Media and writes all sorts of great books about Windows and that kind of thing. You didn't make it to TechEd.
No, I was packed and everything. And I don't know, like I got some kind of, I guess now I would call it a stomach flu. I never actually went to the doctor, but I was sick for 4 days, like full on awful. And then, you know, yesterday and the day before a little bit, but yeah, I couldn't do it. My Saturday night, I was all ready to go. My son had asked me to drive him somewhere. So I left the house for the first time in 4 days and I drove around with him and I was like, I can't go anywhere. Like, I'm just not doing good here. Mm. It was very strange.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I think in hindsight, you missed nothing.
Well, you know, no, I mean, these events are important for the face-to-face stuff. And I was going to do some stuff with Microsoft. I had some plans with the Office Garage guys that would have been kind of cool. And, I like seeing everyone. Mary Jo's there and Peter Bright and, you know, and everyone, the whole gang or whatever. So I kind of missed out on that. And everyone from my workplace as well. I mean, my company does the Best of TechEd awards every year. And I would have taken part in that. And, yeah, it was just kind of a weird thing. I was trying. I actually missed a trip years and years ago for something just like this, and it was I was supposed to go to Sweden to speak at I think at IT Forum, probably like 12 years ago. But it was almost identical, kind of an illness, and so every 12 years or so, I guess it's like a cycle. I don't know. Weird. Yeah. I haven't missed a tech edit in a long time.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was
going to tech. Missed you. We had our tweet up here, and everybody was like, "Where's Paul? Where's Paul?"
It's kind of funny because we just had Build. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many pizzas can you have with Dr. Pizza? Really? After.
Right. After. Better enjoyed over long periods of time, I agree. But I would have enjoyed seeing him.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm sorry you missed it. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah.
What happened? I guess this will be the topic of item number one this week. What happened at TechEd this week?
Yeah. A lot happened. Even though even though it was just Build a month ago, they had a ton of announcements. They condensed their keynote into one day instead of doing it over 2 days. And so it was just like an hour and a half of firing off announcement after announcement after announcement. And the interesting part, as Paul noted in our show notes, is all the announcements this year were about the cloud. There was not a single announcement about an on-premises product.
Right.
And that's really odd for this show because this is a show for IT pros and developers. And so a lot of them, I think, were expecting to hear maybe something about System Center or about the on-premises servers, Exchange, SharePoint. And instead, it was all about Azure, all about Intune, and basically everything was very, very cloud-focused.
Right.
So, yeah, that was interesting.
I don't remember the exact order of this. I might get this switched a little bit. But, you know, as Microsoft has kind of moved to the cloud from a business perspective, from a business customer perspective, they first kind of, I don't know that they coined this term, but they adopted this notion of private cloud computing, which, of course, is just a kind of a new name for, you know, on-premises data center type infrastructure. You know, Microsoft has this hybrid approach that other companies can't duplicate. I think it's a huge strength for them. And so, obviously, they kind of push that stuff. But this year, I think, was the first time they really had kind of such a major push for public cloud. And public cloud is a term that kind of scares enterprises and businesses for obvious reasons. Because you hear that and you think Gmail and Dropbox and, you know, and people get scared by that. But a lot of it was obviously Azure is their big public cloud product, and of course it integrates with the on-prem stuff. So I was kind of blown away by the sheer amount of Azure type announcements at this show.
Which
I keep wanting to call Windows Azure.
Do not. It's called Microsoft Azure.
I know.
It was interesting because it got kind of a mixed review from people who were here. A lot of people said, you know what, I know they want us to go to the cloud, but I'm not ready. And Microsoft's answer to that is, we want you to be ready, and we don't want you to be surprised, and that's why we keep banging you over the head with all this cloud stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, I went to a bunch of sessions here, and the sessions that were the most popular still were the things like about Configuration Manager, and I actually subjected myself to a licensing session.
And page one of the
they handed out like a stack of paper like this big to everybody and said, please turn to page 1,173.
You might note that herein referred to...
There have been a few changes if you could replace the following pages.
What could they talk about I mean, seriously, what was that like?
No, so it was a session about everything that they're doing around virtualization, and that's one of their most complicated licensing.
Oh, you know what? You did need to go to that because you have to explain this to people.
Well, after I sat through it, I was kind of even more perplexed than ever because they keep adding new kinds of virtualization and different ways you can virtualize and remote, and each one has a different set of requirements for what you have to have from a licensing perspective and a hardware perspective. So I was really glad right after that was a tweet up and I could go have a beer.
Yeah. Don't they understand that the more complicated you make this, the less likely people are actually going to do what you want them to do?
Right. Yeah. Or they kind of hope you over license maybe.
Ah.
Yeah. Maybe.
You know, people are scared because I just saw an ad from the Business Software Alliance, you know, the guys who try to get you to snitch on your boss.
Right.
And it was like, I'm not kidding. The ad was report unlicensed software and have a great vacation. And it was this guy on the beach.
Oh, that's incredible.
I was like, Wait a minute. You're saying be a snitch and we'll send you to Hawaii? Well,
you know, the snitch in prison is typically the guy who gets all the goodies. So I could understand the attraction of this job. But
it's kind of amazing that they would. Yeah. That was such a tone deaf ad.
On the flip side of what Mary Jo just said, which I do think is true, the sheer complexity of this thing, it's like the U.S. tax code, probably means that a lot of companies are under-licensed and that when caught, they can at least claim ignorance because of the insanity of how licensing works. And frankly, it's believable, I'm sure, most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are a lot of really good sessions. I will talk later in the show about another one, but there were, you know, it's a show for developers too. And there were some really amazing developer news at this show, which it was kind of surprising did not get disclosed at Build. So we'll talk more about that as we go through all the many, many announcements.
I got to do something about your mic there, Mary Jo.
Should I go up or down?
Can you bend it away from you? I mean, is that arm bend? Oh, yeah, there you go.
It almost seems
there
like
you
it's
go. Now go more air towards conditioner.
It's not like the AC blowing on it from above. You
no,
know, like
it's Mary Jo blowing
like
on it.
Shivering.
That's much better. You're distant.
Is that better?
Yeah, move it closer to your mouth at this point, because now I don't think the... No. Don't bend it in. Bend it out. But rotate it up.
How's that?
Yeah, that's. I think this sound. I'll interrupt every few minutes and let you know.
All right, tell me until I get it right.
I think this sound. No, don't breathe. I think the problem is
don't
breathing. Can we get you to bend your nose just slightly? You know, maybe one of those breathe right strips, but only. No, that's all right. Anyway, people listening, that's what you're hearing. No, it's not horrible, but I know that.
I'm just delighted for once it's not me.
And you, Paul, you. No, it's fine. It's
better now.
Yeah, and it's great to have you from TechEd. So, to whomever arranged all the, room
Microsoft
and everything.
Microsoft did that. So
thank you. Yeah. What else?
Okay. I think a lot of people have said to me what did I think was the biggest announcement at the show, and I'm curious if Paul will agree on this, but I think their biggest announcement was this thing called Azure Remote App at the show. And what that is a way that you can it's basically remoting as a service. That's how I would describe it. So you can have your line of business apps or Office running in Azure in a virtual machine, I believe. And you're going to be able to actually remote those down to users, not just on Windows devices, but on iPhones, iPads, Android tablets, wherever you want it. So if you have apps, you're going to be able to let your customers access them on anything. And that is something I had heard about a year ago that was codenamed Moharo. And I was calling it desktop as a service because that's how it was described to me. But it's not exactly like what we think of when we think of desktop as a service, because that usually we think of that being like streaming apps down to the desktop. Instead, it's remoting apps to the desktop. So you are basically delivering a very similar experience, but in a different way from a licensing perspective and also from a user experience perspective, because you won't have those stuttery kind of things that you sometimes have when you're streaming. I think that was a huge deal.
Is it true that this is you're also seeing the app experience? In other words, you're not seeing like a full Windows 7 desktop or something.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's a huge difference right there too, right? Because Amazon and other companies have remote desktop as a service type solutions, mm-hmm. but it's a desktop.
So, yeah, when you just describe it that way, it's like, oh, remoting as a service sounds super boring. But I actually think that was one of the biggest things at the show, because a lot of people have said, you know, Amazon's in this space, you know, desktop as a service and VMware and Citrix and everybody except Microsoft is in this space. And now finally we're seeing what they're going to do. And they said this is going to be available commercially before the end of this year. I was surprised it's as far along as it is, because when I had heard about it last year, it sounded almost like it was still in development mode, like it hadn't gone very far. So it seems like it's gone pretty quickly, and they've got that almost ready to go. So yeah, that was Codename Moharo, which we heard about last year. I thought that was, if you had to say to me, what was the biggest thing, that was it.
That was clearly the biggest thing. I think that those next two items in the list, which are Azure Express Route and Azure Files, are kind of related to that in the sense that they probably all work in tandem to create a more complete kind of remote infrastructure for people, especially people who are accessing the corporate resources from devices. It's kind of interesting. I think ExpressRoute will help improve the performance of remote app, for example. And then Azure Files is like SMB over the internet, you know, which is kind of awesome in its own way. It's kind of a, I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding this, I look at it as sort of like VPN just for file shares, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, this is all enterprise, right? I mean, there's no end user. It just sounds like broadcasting a Windows app just sounds kind of interesting, but I guess there's no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what it means.
Well, Microsoft has had that. It's interesting. The word broadcast is a good one because they've had this notion inside of corporate infrastructure for a while that you could run, you could sort of virtualize applications,
right,
and deliver them to desktops and to terminals and things like that. This puts it out on the internet, like Mary Jo said. It puts them really out to the devices actually. That people are actually using. Yeah. It's very interesting.
It's like remote access, though, right?
Yeah, it is. Yep, it is like that. And it's interesting. One of the things they gave people who wanted to test it, it's a public preview, it's free, you can test it. They put Office apps up there because they wanted to give people something to test. So they actually have their own Office suite up there. You can try running those remotely on your devices using this service. And the reason they put it on Azure is because you don't always need to have people remoting to get information in apps, right? And you don't have, it's something you want to scale up and scale down, in other words. Like sometimes you need them to do it, sometimes they don't. So that's why it's good that it's a service, or at least that's their pitch, why it's good as a service. Mm.
Everything's better as a service.
Isn't it?
I was literally just going to say that. And by the way, I mean that without, not in a sarcastic
sense.
Not
in the way I mean it. Yeah.
No, well, because to implement this kind of thing in-house requires a lot of infrastructure.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And it requires that whether you need it or not. And that literally is the beauty of doing things that when
hosted all of this is always stuff about, better. I like hosted.
Well, it's generally speaking, I mean, obviously, but, you know, when you hear like as a service,
right,
it literally means the ability to fire up and down
right
resources as you need them without having had to have bought them first.
Yeah,
and,
which is the whole like point that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that whole idea is part of their pitch to IT. They're saying, okay, even if you're kind of reticent about the cloud, what if we start giving you certain things as a service, like file sharing as a service, remoting as a service?
Yeah,
you can leave your stuff on your in your data center, but try these services to kind of connect in. And that's what they mean when they say hybrid cloud.
Yeah.
Versus Brad
free,
Anderson.
Little boy. Come on.
Yeah, I was just. I think Brad Anderson literally referred to this stuff as a gateway.
Yeah,
he did.
Right.
they even admitted.
Yeah.
Because that's how it. Well, because that's how it happens. I think a lot of these people in IT and in enterprises in general, decision makers, whatever, are afraid of the cloud, and for reasons that are good, bad, or indifferent. And you know, I think we talked about this in the context of OneDrive for Business when they introduced that as a standalone service. That in the past we always thought about email as the kind of obvious first thing that businesses would go to for the cloud. But actually, as it turns out, going to email, you know, switching email from on-prem to the cloud is difficult and probably, you know, it's just a horrible process. And there are these other things you can provide as services. I mean, that I think, you know, it's like Swiss cheese. I mean, over time, more and more of these people who think of themselves as having on-premises infrastructure will have more and more links to cloud services. Because of this kind of stuff.
Yep. You bet. I mean, this is the future. And Microsoft's smart because they're a platform company. So when the platform migrates from the desktop, you follow it.
Well, and the beauty is they make the software that these companies are using on-prem. And so when someone says, look, I don't want to move from Exchange.
Right, it's very easy.
I don't want to move from SharePoint. Yeah. I have this stuff inside. Yeah. Microsoft says, cool.
Yeah.
We make, you know, OneDrive for Business. It works with what you have. It's the same. You know, it's a much easier sell than a third party service, a Google service, whatever it may be.
And it's they need to do it because if they don't, then the other guys will convince them to move over.
Yep.
So, and you think these are good, compelling solutions?
Yeah, I think you can make a really good case for why somebody would try them. Like another one that's on Paul's list here is the Azure Site Recovery, right? So this is disaster recovery kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can make a really good case for, hey, you don't want to go build a second data center to have as your backup data center. Why don't you save it, you know, using Hyper-V Recovery Manager, which is what this is basically, and save it up to Azure. And we will run your data center. I just said Senna. Wow.
Welcome back to Boston.
Data
center. Hey, you got a data center over there?
When I'm tired, I suddenly start dropping.
I do
my
the
hours,
same thing.
So
that's hilarious.
That's funny. Yeah. That's the first time I've heard Mary Jo do that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I think you can make a very good case. Like Paul said, you've got your stuff on-prem. If you don't want to have, say, your Exchange server in the cloud, you could at least hook up to a recovery manager kind of thing, or do different things in the cloud and still have the main your main apps and your main data on site.
It's like Carbonite for the enterprise,
yeah,
you know.
There you go.
You could have a PC that you're backing up locally to a USB drive, but you still want to get it out of there.
Right.
And rather than pay for that, you know, the device that you then have to manage yourself, put it up in the cloud.
Yep.
You know, it also gives you that geo diversity kind of thing for your backup as well. If there's some natural disaster, if you're doing all these local backups at a data center that is in whatever area it's in, I mean, it makes sense to have that other backup be somewhere else too.
Animalware. Wait a minute. What? What is that? Is that underwear?
Granimals are back.
Matching
baby.
Underwear? What is it? No.
It's Connectimals as a service.
Anti-malware. I'm sorry. I misread that. Although Animalware would be an interesting service.
That would be. It would. Yeah, the anti-malware one was interesting. So they're taking the engine that's the core of Microsoft Security Essentials and Windows Defender, and they're taking that core engine and putting it on Azure so that you can have, again, anti-malware as a service. It's another one of these things. Everything is a service, right? And they're saying, hey, if you want to run your anti-malware from the cloud, you could do this.
That strikes me as something kind of odd. I've always thought that these, for instance, these online virus scans seemed a little odd. It's like, well,
no. Now you get emails from Microsoft. They'll say, it looks like your VM's running a little slow. Do you want to run the PC tune-up we have as a service?
Yeah. That's what I mean. It seems like,
Yeah,
okay.
Well, the other interesting part of that one is they're not only letting you run their engine, their anti-malware engine, but they partnered with Symantec and Trend Micro, too, so that they're hosting theirs on Azure as well. So you're going to have a choice. You don't have to use Microsoft's. You could use theirs as well.
I'm not an IT guy, and I guess so. I don't really understand the needs of, IT professionals. Clearly, they want – I know what the real problem is. They just don't want to get out of their chair. Really.
Right. Which is why all this as a service stuff is so awesome, because now they don't have to go down and manually implement
something.
No,
you just stay in your chair and you do everything.
You just sign off on something.
From the cloud.
Using like a stylus in your iPad or whatever. Go back to Angry Birds.
Go back to Angry Birds and you don't have to worry about it. I understand. Yeah. I understand how it works.
I talked to Mark Rusinovich at the show about a lot of these announcements. And when he was talking about this one in particular, he said, we've talked about the idea of blurring the lines, not only between on-prem and cloud, but also even between infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. So what they're trying to do is make this look really seamless to people. Like, you don't really need to know whether the thing you're running is in the cloud, whether it's in a VM, whether it's on-prem. And that's like the holy grail and kind of where they're going with all this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You shouldn't matter, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense. What else?
Right. The Office for iPad remote management is one, I would say the one that I'm most personally interested in this whole list. Maybe the only one, but the one I'm very specifically interested in. Because Microsoft already has Exchange ActiveSync and now MDM-based policy, management for devices. They can do things like remote wipe and selective remote wipe and things and all that kind of stuff. And it works obviously across device types, iOS, Android, Windows, Windows Phone. This is new to me, and this concept that Office for iPad will be remotely manageable from their MDM solution, which is Windows Intune. I take this to mean in the future, not that this is something that's innately or built right into Office for iPad right now. But what that means is that from the Office for iPad apps, you can set up various policies because Microsoft has things around, say, information rights management or the ability to share corporate information outside of the company. You can set the rules up for that stuff via policy. And so you could say through this management console that you can't forward an email to another email address, or you can only open a document that's shared through your email using Word, not using the built-in viewer, not using Apple's word processing program. Because once that document is into those other applications, it could potentially be usurped and sent elsewhere. And that by keeping it inside of Office, you can prevent things like copy and paste or you know, the ability to share it normally through whatever, however iOS and in the future Android as well works. And that's really kind of a neat step in a direction I sort of didn't anticipate, you know, that thinking about device management beyond the device, that it also involves and beyond the data, right? Because we already have data management in a sense with the wipe type stuff. We have device management itself and now management of actual apps, because of course Microsoft makes those apps. That's very, very interesting.
Yep. And you're right. It is. It's not there yet. They said it's going to be out by the end of the year, and they have to actually build the capability into Office. That's something they have to change.
So it requires like a future Intune as well as future versions of Office.
It does. Yep. Yeah. And I asked Julia White, who was the one who was demoing this during the keynote. Yeah. I said, you know, is that how you're going to also manage things like Gemini? And, you know, they didn't really want to talk about Gemini, which is the word, the touch first word, Excel and PowerPoint. Sure. But I would think that could also be the way they manage that. You know, And Android as well. Like when Office comes to Android, which they said it's going to happen.
Very explicit about, I thought, at the show.
So this is how they're going to do it. And if you remember when Microsoft did that whole announcement with Satya Nadella and they talked about the Enterprise Mobility Suite, this is part of that whole package. That's where this is fitting in. But yeah, that was really interesting. And it's sad that it kind of gets shoved into the last 10 minutes of the keynote demo because they were just racing to finish because they had so much stuff.
That's when I perked up. I was like, well, you know, because it was like, Azure, you know.
Well, but I got to say, it's a nice sleeping aid, Azure.
Yeah.
Azure. Yeah, that was cool. And then the other Office 365 thing they announced that was pretty big was the data encryption around SharePoint. This is something that they don't really want to use the code name, but it's Fort Knox. That's the code name for it. And right now they already offer encryption for Exchange in Office 365, and now they're going to be adding encryption for SharePoint. And that's pretty interesting too.
They specifically said that every file would have its own encryption key.
Yep.
That is unusual.
Crazy, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm not Steve Gibson. I get it, but that's crazy, right? That's different.
It's just, they're trying to go the extra mile with this and really like mix things up. And they're saying, you know, not all the same files for the same customers are being stored on the same servers. They're really trying to make an extra level of security built into the Office 365 apps. So that, yeah, it's pretty insane in a good way.
Right.
Wow. I'm sure there's a, I'm not Steve Gibson either. I'm sure there's a good reason for it.
Like per file encryption keys.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of keys.
Seems like a lot to keep track of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe if it's monkey 1234, monkey 1235, monkey 1236, then it's not so
hard. Key 1234.
Then it's not so hard. Software development.
Oh, yeah. So then the dev news, which also only got like 10 minutes in the keynote, even though it was huge. They talked about their new partnership for people who want to develop Windows and Windows Phone apps with JavaScript and CSS. And so, you know how they've been working with Xamarin now to do .NET development? They're now doing stuff around the Apache Cordova platform for those people. And they're building...
No big Xamarin announcement.
No big Xamarin announcement. And instead, it's like the antithesis of that, right? It's they're building HTML and CSS tooling into Visual Studio so that you can have a choice and an alternative to the .NET and Xamarin stuff. So that was interesting. And it got a lot of applause and love at the show, actually, because some people do want to do that. Not everybody's in the Xamarin camp, even though Microsoft's a big Xamarin partner. So that was interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm still a little confused by this. They describe the apps you would create with Cordova and Visual Studio as hybrid apps, and they're obviously HTML JavaScript apps. And then .NET Xamarin type apps that would go across Windows, iOS, and Android are native apps, which is fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. I wonder now, I've gotten a lot of tips over the past several months from people who have told me that Microsoft was working on cross-development tools. Mm-hmm. And everyone took that to mean natively in Visual Studio. You know, maybe there would be like an express version of Visual Studio where you could create iOS and Android apps or something. And now I wonder if this isn't all that that was. And I don't mean to downplay it, but it's... And I also wonder when the hell they're going to buy Xamarin, for crying out loud. It's like Sam and Diane on Cheers. Just get it over with.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe, when I heard
this is a good Boston reference. That's good. I like it.
It is.
I don't understand.
When I heard this announcement, I was like, maybe they're not going to buy Xamarin.
I'm thinking not. I'm thinking this puts the kibosh on the whole deal.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why do it?
I know. Yeah. It kind of made me say, you know, yeah, they are still saying developers should have choice. And there are quite a few developers out there who still want to do JavaScript, CSS, and not .NET. So it's good to have choice. But it kind of made me wonder, like, maybe the Xamarin thing didn't happen, or maybe it never was going to happen. I don't know. It was very interesting.
Right. Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine have bought Xamarin, and they're
right.
going to merge it with
their
Beats.
Newfound billions.
It's called, Beats Cross Platform, nice. And it's very exciting.
Oh, it's called C#Beats.
Beats.net.
Yay.
Maybe Steve Wozniak's going to buy them. I don't know. He was at the show.
Was he?
Around.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What?
Yep. Because now he runs Fusion.io, right?
He doesn't run it. He's like their...
I love that there's some reason why it has to be okay that he's there. He's Rocky Raccoon can go wherever he wants.
He can go wherever he wants.
He's welcome. Everyone loves him.
He invented personal computing, practically.
Yeah. Yep.
The question is, why would he have any interest in this? That's the question.
He was part of a session on SQL Server 2014, believe it or not. Yep, he was. I saw him listed as a speaker, and I thought it was a joke at first. And then I was like, maybe there's someone at Microsoft named Steve Wozniak, but it was him.
I'll just remind everyone that Steve Jobs showed up at a Microsoft, I believe at a PDC or some Microsoft event years ago, and demonstrated web objects.
Right.
And because it was cross-platform. Remember at the time, you know, NT, it was for whatever, for Next, OpenStep, whatever.
Does Microsoft just completely off topic still have that stake in Apple? Did they get rid of that?
Oh, well,
remember they put in $125-150 million mm-hmm. when Apple was dying.
It's probably like a major source of revenue for them now.
If they do, it is another billion dollar business.
Smart move.
That's $1 billion.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
no kidding.
That's a good question.
I don't know. I would think so, but I don't know.
Well, I bet you they divested it or were forced to divest at some point. I'll look into it while you guys continue to talk about Azure. I'm sorry. Aww. No, I love it. I think Azure is the future of Microsoft, so I have to pay attention.
Oh, yeah, and the other developer news that was really another really big one, and this is the one I'm surprised wasn't at Build, was they talked about the future of ASP.NET, which is .NET on the server, basically. And what they're doing there is kind of crazy. They're uncoupling all the pieces that used to be all stuck together to make up .NET for the server, and they're releasing them modularly. Modularly, is that a word?
Modularly, yes.
Okay. As NuGet packages, which is like, wow, what? Microsoft open source stuff? What? And they're really doing a lot around making it so you have choice. Another whole emphasis on choice thing. So if you want to use a different web server from IIS, you can. They're shrinking down the common language runtime, the CLR, and they're making it something that can be delivered with the app itself. They're doing a lot of really crazy and very cool stuff. And Scott Hanselman and Scott Hunter presented that, and they basically said, here is the future of ASP.NET, .NET on the server. And I went to that session too, and it was packed. I mean, people were super, super interested in where they're going with that.
That's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I've seen this. This has been kind of publicized as Microsoft open sources .NET.
I know. I know why some people have written it that way. I'm like, it's not exactly that.
a little strong.
I mean,
yeah.
I remember at Build, they talked about how they're making more of .NET open source. Like there are big chunks of .NET that they're turning into open source and putting into the .NET Foundation. But this is more a case of using open source principles and methods towards building apps that take advantage of ASP.NET and build on top of that. It was really, really interesting and just kind of a really very non-Microsoft thing to do. Big break from the past.
I'm still trying to figure out if Microsoft has a stake in the Apple. I'm sorry. I think at one point it was worth $4.5 billion.
Oh wow! Right?
That it was a $150 million investment in 1997 Apple. But I don't. I'm trying to figure out if they divested it. They had 18.2 million shares of Apple stock, which they bought at, get ready for this, $8.31 a share. It has split several times since then, and it sold them. Microsoft sold all of its Apple
holdings.
Sold back
to Apple.
Well, or whatever, on the market. If they had held on.
Ask.com says, does Microsoft still own Apple?
Ask Cortana. Someone ask Cortana.
If they had held on, it would have been worth upwards of actually now $10 billion.
Yep.
That $150 million investment. But they sold it off. They may have made a lot of money on it. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've answered that question. Do you want to? Is now a good time to take a break?
Yeah, I would say so.
All right. Because we have some huge Xbox news coming up.
Thank goodness. That will warm up Mary Jo.
This Xbox is on my prem. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want with the great folks at Lynda, Lynda.com. Visit Lynda.com/windows for a very special deal. Let me just tell you what Lynda can teach you. Office, of course, including Office 365. They keep up to date all the time. You can learn Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Windows 8.1 Update 1. There are over 2,568 courses, and you're going to get access to every one of them for an entire week. Learn how to use Photoshop, edit with Premiere, learn about Excel. Do you know pivot tables? You could learn pivot tables. Build effective and engaging PowerPoint presentations. Learn how to use the entire Microsoft ecosystem, Windows desktop and mobile, Windows games. Yes, development too. Creating and distributing apps, navigating the broad range of functions and everyday tasks you'll encounter on your Windows devices. Look, keeping your brain nimble and flexible involves lifelong learning. It makes you more valuable at work, and it makes, frankly, using your computer more fun. So I want you to visit lynda.com. Browse around. I mean, you will be amazed at the huge variety. Yes, how to make your own podcasts. Yes, if you wanted to. Google Analytics, how to use those, how to design with logos, how to develop in C, Objective-C, C++, C#, Python, Ruby, anything you'd want to learn, you can learn at lynda.com. And it's not, by the way, these are instructors who are all in the biz. They are some of my best friends, actually, teach at lynda.com. Many people you see on our shows teach at lynda.com. Learn it all at lynda.com. Just go to lynda.com/windows. Normally $25 a month for access to the entire course library, $37.50 for the premium plan. You're going to get it free for 7 days. How many things can you learn in 7 days? Here's your challenge. First look, Windows 8.1 Update 1. How about that? This is great stuff, really great stuff. You could see, watch the course introduction, find out what the course tells you, and then sign up. Sign up and get that free week. Jess Stratton teaching that course. lynda.com/windows for 1 week free. And we thank Lynda for supporting, not only supporting Windows Weekly, but frankly, for supporting all of us. We all have taken classes at Lynda. I offer classes to our our employees, you know, training. We're moving to Adobe Premiere from Final Cut. That means a little bit of training involved. I mean, what better way to do it? Lynda.com. Windows Weekly on the air. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo's just back from Tech Ed, where she was loaded up with.
She's not back. She's still there.
I'm still here.
Is it over?
No, it's going on for a few more days.
Oh, wow. So what we just talked about was just the keynote. There's still more to learn.
Yeah.
More fabulous licensing seminars waiting for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Ooh. Ooh. What I told a couple of the guys who were at the podcast last night, they were asking me what sessions I went to, and I mentioned this VDI licensing thing, and one guy said, here was his exact quote. He said, "Jeezum."
Like, okay. I think that's nice. The new Jay-Z album he's talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There are a lot of sessions, though, on every topic you can imagine in the enterprise. I think there are like literally thousands of sessions here, and wow. There are 8,000 people here.
Did they say anything about doing this again in the future, or are they going to merge this into Build, too?
Yeah, that was something a lot of people were trying to track down. And on the back of the program, it says, we'll see you next year.
Somewhere.
But they haven't said
somehow.
Where.
Doesn't, right. Or yeah. If it means at Tech Ed.
Right.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. We'll see you. One guy I talked to said, yeah, they are going to do it again. But they haven't disclosed an actual plan at this point.
Interesting. Tech Ed is primarily for IT professionals. Is that right?
And developers. Some extent developers. But... Not as much of a developer show as Build.
Enterprise developers, maybe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much an enterprise show.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Speaking of enterprise, Xbox.
Right.
Like that segue. That
you owe me, Mary Jo. I'm going to talk about Xbox for 5 minutes, okay?
No, you know what? I'm actually interested in this Xbox news.
Oh, methinks you doth protest too much.
No, I am.
All
I'm
right.
interested in the part one of this very much.
The no more Kinect?
Yep.
So, obviously, Xbox was... somebody at Microsoft must have been concerned. We weren't, that Xbox was losing market share to the PlayStation 4 because it was $100 cheaper.
Yep.
But, Paul, I
should have been obvious about 9 months ago, but,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever.
And it feels like capitulation because, in fact, I'm unhappy about it because I have a Kinect. I want more games developed to use the features of Kinect.
Yeah.
More software to use, the infrared, this means now there's going to be a population of Xbox One owners who don't have Kinect.
So, I don't know. You know, I'm not sure about that. So I think that the reality of Kinect is that obviously it makes sense for Kinect games, Kinect-specific games, like the fitness type apps and all that kind of stuff. It makes sense for entertainment apps where you use your voice to control playback and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the greatest uses of Kinect.
I use it all the time. Xbox Pause, Xbox Play.
Yeah, that stuff works really well.
Yep.
And you know, I've used this kind of comparison in the past, but, you know, a lot of people think that I sort of knee-jerk hate things that Google makes or Apple makes or whatever. But when I complained about the Chromecast, for example, which is this really inexpensive little device you can throw on a TV or whatever, you know, one of the big problems with that thing, which is kind of, it sounds silly on the face of it, but you trigger some kind of content playing back, and it plays and it looks great, and then the doorbell rings or the phone rings or your kids come stumbling in an explosion of sound, and what you want to do is pause that thing, but your phone or tablet has gone to sleep and now you got to wake it up, you got to put it in your pin. You know, it's not as easy as using a remote. But the thing that's even better than using a remote is just saying, like you said, Xbox Pause. You know, you can do that, anyone in the room can do it, and it's such a convenience.
It's
a good thing.
The feature of the Xbox One I use more than any other.
Yeah. So
or Xbox Watch PBS or Xbox Watch CNN.
Sure.
And it does it. Now, it does it because for two reasons. One, because the Kinect has the microphone. So without it, I can't talk to the Xbox One. Am I right?
Right, right.
But it also, the Kinect has the infrared transceiver that talks to my TiVo, my AV receiver, and my television.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So it's the ultimate universal remote, because when I say Xbox Watch CNN, it knows exactly what to do. It knows my cable guide. It knows what channel to tune to. It knows the TiVo has to be on. The AV receiver has to be on and set to cable. It knows the TV has to be on. And it does all that.
Right.
That's huge.
Yes. The problem is that device is really expensive. In fact,
it's
about $100.
Yeah.
And so I think the primary issue they had was that Sony, and it's funny, I've seen so many smart people fall into this trap too of just kind of blurting this out like it makes any sense. You know, the PlayStation 4 is better if you want a pure gaming experience. It's like saying the PlayStation 4 is better if you want to do only gaming, which is baloney because they're equally good at that. But the Xbox One does so much more, but it's also $100 more. So I think what they needed was, I know what they need. I knew this last June. They needed an option that could go head-to-head with the PS4, not just on price, but on capabilities. Works the same. There you go. Yeah. And so somebody on Twitter, some buddies on Twitter probably said something which I actually agree with, which is it's too bad they couldn't have just made the $500 version of whatever it costs now be the $399 version.
Yeah.
And that's true. I think the truth of it is that sensor thing is really expensive for them. It's not just something, you know, that they're artificially saying is worth $100. I think it costs $100. I think that's the truth.
Yeah, I'm sure they were selling it at cost.
Well, they're already selling it at a loss. I mean, can you imagine lopping $100 off the price of this thing?
Right.
And so that's the reality of it. This is something they should have done from day one. I agree with you with others who have said, well, you know, now Kinect is dead because, no one's going to develop for this and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the truth is for the kind of hardcore games like the Call of Duties, the Titanfall, well, maybe Titanfall probably has some Kinect stuff in it. But, you know, most people aren't going to be talking to their computer while they're playing a video game that type.
Right.
And it's just, and they're certainly not going to be gesticulating in front of it, you know, other than when they lose to me when, you know, because I'm really good at Call of Duty. But,
you yourself has said
that
the command Xbox, what was it, Xbox record that or whatever?
Record that. I used it just today. It's wonderful.
So you're playing a game and you want to save the last 30 seconds. You say Xbox record that.
So
can you continue to shoot? Wait,
is that worth $100?
No.
Yeah, I think it is actually.
All right.
But the truth is, a lot of people can't afford that.
I understand.
By the way, Yusuf Mehdi, who's a corporate vice president at Xbox for Microsoft, said something really interesting. And this reeks of BS in a way, but it was the first time I'd ever heard anyone make this argument, which was when asked, why Sony had such a lead over Xbox One. They said, well, obviously they're in more markets than we are, for one thing, like almost four times as many markets. That's a big deal. But he said, you know, the truth is we know that the Xbox 360 has much higher customer satisfaction rating than the PS3. And so our customers are less likely to upgrade because they still love their Xboxes. I was like, I'm not saying that I buy into that, but I'm just saying that that's interesting.
I think Microsoft's mishandled Xbox from day one. I know you agree.
Oh, I
You know, the announcements that it had to be always on, always connected. I mean, just, you couldn't use it in a submarine or whatever. And there's still misapprehensions. DMA.
And then they went on to give in to the wrong things, which kills me.
Well, that's my question. Is this the wrong thing? Because this is definitely a give in.
No, I think this is something that should have been there from day one.
No, you're right.
You don't have to include the Kinect with the box to require developers to write to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of the artificial hand wringing out there is artificial.
I just love the Kinect. Worry. I can use Skype and it will zoom into me when I talk.
Part of the
reason it's not selling well is I think people don't understand it or think of the old Kinect. DMA1 in our chat room said, my room's not big enough to use Kinect.
Well, now it is.
It is big enough. It's the old Kinect.
Honestly, I think people would be blown away. I really don't think people understand the importance of Kinect. I'll give you another one that no one knows anything about. In all other consoles and in previous Xbox consoles, if you had two controllers connected to the system, and on one of them you were logged in with Microsoft account A, and then the other one was Microsoft account B or whatever, and you were switching the controllers back and forth, the system would have no way of knowing that. And so whichever controller was tied to Microsoft account A, if that person got an achievement, that would happen, even if it wasn't the guy who did it, you know, who owned the account. Because the system has no way to know who has the controller. But with a Kinect, it knows who has the controller.
It knows
and so
everything.
It knows you are you.
It knows
and it
you're
knows,
not wearing pants.
Well, right. It does know that too, actually. But you see the kind of importance of that. If you have two people on a sports team or something, one guy's the goalie, one guy's on offense or something. If we switch controllers, it knows now that we've switched those positions.
It's amazing.
It's smart. That is a very cool capability. It's a little hard to explain in a 30-second television ad, along with all the other great stuff that Kinect does. But it is. It's a neat thing. So there's an upsell now for those people. I will tell you that
you can buy a Kinect as an add-on later.
You'll be able to in the fall.
Okay.
But you know, when you buy a PlayStation 4, for example, you can buy the whatever they call it, the Sony whatever the piece of junk is.
Yeah.
Doesn't do anything. It's a piece of junk. It's terrible. It's a waste of money. $60, I think it is. The Kinect is a great upgrade. I mean, with the Xbox One in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, it does a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that I think, I think would surprise people. So. Now they have a $400 version.
I guess. All right, you've talked me off the ledge. I guess you're right. I mean, it's a nice feature, but if you're very price sensitive, I actually kind of agree with the Microsoft guy that if you have an Xbox 360, you know, because it's not compatible with Xbox 360 games, the One isn't that compelling of a purchase, especially at $500. But even at $400, I think most people are waiting for the killer game.
Because I've been doing it for years. I mean, once a month, I cart an Xbox 360 in a bag. And my son and I both go, we go up the street. We play video games with these guys up the street. I would never do that with an Xbox One. It's twice as big and heavy.
Yeah.
I'd be afraid of damaging it. You know, it's really expensive.
Well,
by the way, no one has one. There's no...
And it's firmly wired into my home theater system. I can't...
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing.
I got the Kinects going up through the back, and it's in there. I don't like to take it out for anything.
Yeah.
What I'm wondering in all this though is what does it mean on the developer side, right?
Because exactly,
when you had Kinect forcibly bundled with every Xbox One, it was like, okay, you know it's going to be there, right. And as a developer, even you might or you might not write applications that take advantage of it, but you probably would think about it. Now you can't count on it being there. So that what does that mean, right? I mean, I wonder what it's going to mean even on the Windows side too, even though those aren't, you know, the same Kinects and all that.
This is a lot like every other decision that Microsoft makes. You know, in other words, are we going to make Office for the iPad and thus screw over Windows or screw over Surface? You know, those kind of weird... Solomon type decisions you have to make. If Xbox One doesn't make it,
right?
Because developers and users and everyone else are going to PlayStation, it's not going to matter if Kinect was bundled with it.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right. Yeah,
it's more the platform is more important than Kinect. You know,
were we at risk of that? You think it was that bad?
They just unbundled it. I mean, this was a core part of the
What was the...
Well, they saw that... So, by the way, they said, they told someone, I don't know, New York Times or Forbes or somebody, the decision-making process for this started in April. Well, you know what else happened in April? April was right when Titanfall had just come out and they didn't win the month. And that was when, you know, if you can't win in the United States too, by the way, if you can't win in the month when your so-called best ever exclusive game, this is the reason you want the console, has come out, nothing is happening this year to turn around the sales trends. I mean, it's early yet, it's early yet, it's early yet. Yeah. And then suddenly it's not early yet. And you know, that gap grows and it grows and it grows. You got to nip this one in the bud before it gets out of control. They've sold a lot of them, by the way. I mean, they've sold whatever the figure was, 5 million into the channel. It's not inconsiderable, but possible. It's possible. There are almost twice as many PS4s out there in actual consumers' hands as there are Xbox Ones.
Wow.
And that differential is only going to grow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's what they're trying to prevent.
Right. It does, no matter why they did it, and I actually do think they had to do it because of a sales perspective.
Yeah.
It kind of does make it look like we're backing away from the Kinect. And I know that's not the message they want to send, and they have always touted the Kinect as proof that we develop a lot of cutting edge stuff and we're ahead of the curve and this is a big differentiator. But doing this does definitely send a mixed signal. I don't think you can get around that.
I look at this exactly like the decision to go back and reform Windows 8. Whatever to make it better for mouse and keyboard. It's exactly like that, because people look at that and they say, oh, you're backtracking. It's two steps forward, one step back. You said that touch was the future, or voice and, you know, in this case, whatever. In both cases, I think Microsoft still does feel that these things are the future, but they also know they need to cater toward reality and to today's users and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, sometimes you you move a little too quick. It's not something we're used to in Microsoft land, but, you know, Windows 8 and now Xbox One, maybe. I mean, they just went down that road too quick.
Yeah. I'm seeing a ton of editorials on different sites saying, Microsoft, don't give up on the future. This was like the good stuff you were doing.
You know what? The world that we live in, and me and you and Leo, you know, this little tech bubble kind of sucks because it is so easy to criticize everything. You know, my criticism of this decision is that it happened now. I wish it had happened earlier, but I look at it like this is the right thing to do overall. Understanding that, yes, it does undermine Kinect a little bit, which I think is better than undermining Xbox. You know, it's amazing to me. Like I see this from users. You know, I see it from people on Twitter, email, and my comments. You know, oh, Microsoft flip-flopping again, backtracking. What? I don't even understand what that means.
Yeah.
You know, you just... They're responding to real-world market conditions, and they're doing what users are asking them to do. So I'm not saying it's, I'm not saying we should praise the company, but my God, it's so easy to just complain about everything. I'll leave it to the experts. That's what I do. I don't know. It's amazing to me how negative people are.
Yeah. You know, I also kind of wondered aloud. I think I even said it on Twitter. I guess that's wondering aloud.
Oh, yes.
About whether Cortana coming to Xbox could take over some of the functionality that people are relying on, at least from the voice perspective.
Xbox. But I don't know. You still need to have a way to get
it. You still need to have a microphone, right?
So you could wear something like you're wearing, you know, Microsoft. You could. So, actually, one comes with it. You know, that I guess that would work. You know, it remains to be seen. I talked about this earlier this week, but Amazon came out with this Roku type device recently, a Fire TV, I think it's called. It's what it is. It's just, you know, it's a set top box, whatever. But one of the things it does is you can speak to it. And the way that they do it is I don't have the controller, but I'll just hold up like another remote. You can picture like a remote control and you hold it up to your mouth and you hold a button in and you speak to it. That's actually not a horrible way to handle it. It's super low tech compared to crazy 21st century microphone, you know, technology, you know, overcompensating for the sound of speakers and knowing where you are in the room based on positioning, you know, yada, yada, yada. But if all you want to say is, I want to see movies with this actor in it, or I want to find this thing, I mean, actually, that works pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be some super crazy you know, futuristic, you know, Minority Report thing. I mean, just get the job done.
No, I have that on my $10,000 Samsung OLED TV, and it does work well, as well as on the Amazon. But if you start splitting the hardware development up like that, then you really got a problem. Because a developer, for a developer to say, check for Kinect. If exists, do this. That's not so hard.
And there's no other microphone option, right? Like, you could make this case where...
Look, how much is a game? $60. Kinect, $100. It's less than two games. Really? Are you that price sensitive? Really? Do you never buy games? The cost of the machine is small compared to the cost of a game library. I think the bigger problem is that people like their Xbox 360. I think, actually, Microsoft was right.
It's an interesting argument. This is a tough sell for a living room device. It's very expensive. Even at $400, it's very expensive. PlayStation 4 is very expensive. You know, when you can buy a Roku for $99 or less, or an Amazon or the Apple TV or whatever, it's all these devices that cost under $100. You know, ways to go before they're going to hit some kind of a mass market with this kind of device.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry, Mary Jo.
No, I am very, very interested in this because it impacts more than just people playing Call of Duty.
Yeah.
But
the understanding
business.
That those people are the most important constituents. But there's another half to the story, though, which is that, and this is, after years of abuse, Microsoft has also removed, or also will be removing, the requirement to have an Xbox Live Gold subscription in order to use most entertainment experiences and Microsoft apps.
You mean like Netflix?
On the console, like Netflix.
Because I never understood why I had to buy Netflix and Gold.
Nobody did. And back in the days, you know, back in the 360 days, I mean, I guess we were a captive audience, and they could just keep charging us $60 a year, and we gleefully played it because we wanted matchmaking and Call of Duty or whatever. But I just talked about those $99 and cheaper solutions that all can run Netflix and Hulu Plus for free. Xbox 360 and Xbox One until June 1 are the only ones that where you have to pay another subscription fee on top of that in order to access this stuff. It's amazing. Even to use Microsoft's Internet Explorer browser, OneDrive, the one guide, the program guide, you needed an Xbox Live Gold subscription. It's like this additional annual VIG on top of everything else you just spent on the console. It's crazy. And so they're getting rid of that as well. And that one, I have to say, is somewhat out of the blue. I've been calling for them to do this for years and years and years. I've never understood this. And so they're finally doing that. That's also good news. Haven't seen a lot of backtracking complaints about that one. But that one also, I would say, is good news.
And music is changing. Is that right?
Okay, so all right, God, I feel like I've been talking about Xbox forever, Mary Jo. I'm sorry. I'll try to
burn music through this. I use Xbox Music.
So yeah, this one's big for me. I mean, I'm writing a book about Xbox Music. I love Xbox Music. I think Mary Jo and I are the only Xbox Music users on the East Coast.
No, there's at least six or seven
of us. There aren't many. Xbox Music is an excellent music service. The app on Windows Phone 8.1 needs some work. I get that. But I actually like it a lot. I use it all the time. I think it works great. As originally envisioned, and as I had heard about it before it was announced, there are one or two things that are still missing from the service. And the confusion that I wrote about here is that Tom Warren caught a story on a Chinese website that said the ability to stream music from OneDrive would be coming to Xbox Music, which is one of those things I had heard years ago about a feature. In fact, I used to, at the time it was SkyDrive, but I used to write about how you would be able to, you would have a music folder in SkyDrive. You'd put music in it and then you'd be able to access it from your Xbox Music app on your phone or whatever. You could download that music to your phone if you wanted over the air and you'd be able to do that. And this has never appeared. That is apparently what is appearing, but people have commingled it with a feature that Microsoft promised, which was the ability to scan and match. So right now, if you have a lot of music on your computer, you can run the Xbox Music app. It will look at that music. It will match it back to what's up in Xbox Music in the store. And if the music is in the store, it will add it to your collection. And then you can sign on with another device and that music will just appear there and you can stream it. It's automatic. You don't have to move the music around like we used to have to in the old days. It's a neat feature. The thing that's missing, though, it's a feature you get with iTunes Match. You get it in the Amazon MP3 service. You get it in Google Music. Is if the music isn't in the store, like if you have an album that's not in the Xbox Music Store for some reason, there's no way to upload it to your collection. Like you can't, there's no store there for that, like a storage. Like people call that a music locker.
Yeah, Google Microsoft does that. Amazon does that. A number of companies do that.
Yeah.
It's one of the main reasons I use Google Play Music.
Yeah.
Because it's got my music and a store. It doesn't have to be the same. And
right. It's funny. I sort of use OneDrive like that today. I do have a music folder in OneDrive, and I do put music in it that I know isn't in the Xbox Music Store. It's kind of a ham-handed way to do it. But and I guess it would work in that capacity, but my understanding is that the OneDrive now-based functionality will be streaming only.
Oh.
And obviously what you would want is you'd want the ability to commingle the store collection with your personal collection and be able to download it to any device. And so this is the confusion. So, you know, how this kind of corresponds with what's really happening, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
I got the music in me.
I'd like the music in OneDrive, and then I would like it to go into Xbox Music. I think it's coming, but...
Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV, and we're going to talk about the Surface and more. I guess there's some announcements coming up. Is it this week, the event?
Next week.
Next week. You guys are going to be flying to New York, which is a short flight for Mary Jo.
Very short.
Subway flight. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. The great guys at IT Pro, Tim and Don and the gang there, produce really excellent content designed for the budding IT professional, the aspiring IT professional, or just an IT professional who wants to polish their skills. If you're interested in getting certs, IT Pro TV is an easy, painless way to learn it at a fraction of the cost of a technical school or even the training materials you'll find in the bookstore. It's easy. It's entertaining. If you like, I'm at itpro.tv. That's their website. I see the on-air light is blinking on the website. So let's head over to the live on-air video. And you'll see if you watch it, it looks a lot like... Oh, I got to log in. It looks a lot like stuff we send out. And that's because Tim and Don were fans of Tech TV and then, of course, later of Twit. They wanted to do something similar for an IT professional or somebody learning the certs. Now we can go to the live. I've logged into. You can create a free account to log in. You don't have to pay for the account to watch the live stuff. Does that not look a little bit familiar? To me, it looks just like the old Tech TV set. They're preparing for a show right now. They've got a live chat room. Tim Broom is in there right now waiting for people to join the broadcast. Like, look at the episodes, and you'll see the broad variety of stuff they cover. They are adding 30 hours now of new content every week. Their episode library has courses on CompTIA, Microsoft, Cisco, A+, CCENT, NetPlus Security, plus MCSA. They're doing new high-end security courses from ISC Squared, including SSCP and CISSP. Adam Gordon's doing those. He is a great guy to do it. And by the way, that's an awesome thing because if you want a single skill that probably will be the most valuable skill in the years to come in IT, it's security. And having those ISC squared certs really enhances your value. Now, normally, IT Pro TV charges a flat monthly rate, $57 a month, $570 for an entire year, for full access to everything. And when you sign up for a year, you can also download the episodes, or audio or video, and for offline consumption, which is very nice. That's really nice. There is that free subscription, lets you watch live sessions. They have a Roku player as well as, of course, your tablet, your desktop, and so forth. I'm going to tell you how you can really save in a second, but there's so many other features here. You get the Measure Up practice exams free, included with your subscription. Those are worth $79. Plus, their virtual machine Sandbox Lab lets you do hands-on practice and learning. All of this for $57 a month or $570 for the entire year. But we have a special offer for Windows Weekly listeners. Go to itpro.tv/ww and use the offer code WW30 and you'll take 30% off your subscription, not just for the first month or year, but forever. You are going to learn. It is fun. If you like what you see on Twit, you're going to love preparing for that IT certification with itpro.tv. itpro.tv/ww. Use the offer code WW30, and you'll save 30%. People are getting jobs. People are really, I hear every day from somebody who says, I found out about IT Pro TV from you, and it is absolutely incredible. And, of course, there's no hassle, easy cancellation policy. And probably the only reason you'll cancel is because you got the cert. But keep it. You know what? Lifelong learning. It's a good thing. IT Pro .tv/ww. We thank Tim, Don, and the whole gang over there for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're talking about Windows, Xbox, Azure, and Surface. It seems like launch cycle speeding up here? So it was a year and a half ago the Surface was announced. 6 months ago, Surface...
Surface 2 was, October, right?
And now here we are, Surface 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, Surface 4 will be out in July. And then
exactly.
So this Surface Pro 3, this is an Intel device?
So we should backtrack and say what we know and what
okay, this is rumor. Nobody's said anything, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the launch of the next Surface or Surfi is May 20th in New York. We know that. We're pretty sure Surface Mini, which is based on ARM, is one of the devices that's going to be announced. And Paul had heard that there was going to be at least one Intel-based device as well announced at that launch. Somebody today, I'm forgetting who found this, so sorry I'm forgetting. Somebody found a link on a Microsoft webpage mentioning a Surface Pro 3. And we don't know if that's the other device that's going to be launched. It would seem like that is the case. But we don't know anything more about it, I don't think. We don't know any additional specs. We don't know if that means Atom-based, Haswell-based. We don't really know what that means. Or how big the screen size is going to be. But given the name is Surface Pro, I would tend to think it could be a larger and more powerful device.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll know next week. We'll May 20th. On Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yep. Microsoft's going to stream it. They're going to stream the launch.
Yep. What time?
Starting 11 a.m. ET, so 8 a.m. your time. Sorry.
He's like, I got up early.
The good news is I don't think this stuff is going to be available for sale immediately. So you're going to have about a month.
All right.
Before you can get one anyway. So.
And if anybody is coming to New York or going to be in the area next Tuesday, we're thinking about doing a little meetup after the event.
Rattle and hum.
Yep. So stay tuned if you're around.
Yeah, I'm going to spend the night, which I don't usually do.
Nice.
And I don't know. I probably
you have
didn't
room on
mention
your couch,
this to you.
Mary Jo, or
actually, I found an awesome deal in a hotel in New York City. I was talking to Brad Sams from Neowin about this because one of the reasons they don't stay in New York is it's so expensive. You know?
I'm guessing you didn't use Airbnb. Apparently now illegal in New York.
Right. No, but you know, hotels in New York can be $400 or $500 a night.
Easy. Yeah.
But I found one for like $260. It's kind of a smoking deal. So. My wife may actually come as well, so we'll see.
We use those sites like, what is it, hotels.com and Priceline. We use those last minute. I think it's Hotel Tonight, something like that. And I found it amazing, like the Sofitel, which is a very nice midtown hotel for like $175. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, the other problem is, you know, it's not that New York City is so physically big, although it is a humongous city. It just has so many distinct areas. And so if you do something like I was on Expedia, finding a hotel, you really have to know your way around to understand what area you're in, because you can't just look at hotels in Manhattan. You have to go to the exact area.
Well, the Bronx is up and the Battery's down. People ride around in a hole in the ground.
Yes, we do.
Right. I know that much.
Yeah, it's a complicated place.
It is.
If you don't live there.
Joe, are you going to stay in the meatpacking district?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's close. Wherever I am is very close to the. Is actually, that wasn't
you're,
necessarily.
You're staying
smart,
on the edge of Chinatown, aren't you?
That's close. Yeah.
Yeah, that is close. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not close to Rattle and Hum. I should have stayed up closer to there.
Well, because that's a longer walk after 800 beers.
It's a short cab ride.
Be 800 beers, Leo.
Short cab ride or subway ride.
You
got to
try one of each.
Right.
Paul's going to try his earn his 40 beer mug in one night.
Wow.
Right.
When I want, see, I would do that because I want a mug with my name.
Yeah. I kind of do too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got everyone knows your name.
That's commitment.
Rattling.
You, yeah. Boy.
That's right.
They know your name.
They do.
Do they shout when you come in the door? Mary Jo!
They do. I told you that last time we went in and they should at least three people shouted her name, and these two guys at the bar were very disgruntled. And they were like, you didn't greet us like that when we came in.
Hey, but there's good news. Shivers is in our chat room. He knows New York, but like the back of his hand. He says, there's 27 lamp posts from your hotel to Rattle and Hum. So you're going to be okay.
Very good to know. Oh.
I will bounce off every one of them. That I can assure you.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, we'll maybe, I won't speak for Mike, but maybe we'll try to get one of you on before or after the event to report in. And, of course, the following day will be Windows Weekly, so
yep.
we can talk about it. But your best guess?
Surface Mini and a Pro device of some kind.
Yeah, and maybe a Surface Pro 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that name came up. By the way, that could just be a typo. I mean,
right. But, it could, actually.
Given what we've kind of heard on the side, yeah, I suppose they could call it Surface Pro 3, you know, a bigger device. We'll see.
Bigger than the current Surfaces?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't you
hopefully by bigger, it doesn't mean thicker.
I know. Right.
It's going to weigh 8 pounds, but no, it's going to have a DVD drive.
I think they kind of have two choices. Yeah. They go bigger and faster and more expensive, or they go Atom and slower but cheaper.
Right.
See, I don't see that. I don't see that. I don't know anything about the screen, so I don't know a lot about the second device at all. But if it's a bigger screen, let's say, and it's a tablet, hopefully it's as thin as the Surface 2, but has the innards of the Surface Pro 2, if that makes sense, or similar, you know, upgraded, whatever. We'll see.
Well, I'll send I'll call Randall Schwartz and tell him. No, wait a minute. No, I guess it doesn't preempt Randall. That's good. That's good. He's on Wednesday.
You know what? The one of the problems with the Surface Pro lineup is that there are no. Well, there are some upgrades, but there aren't a lot of upgrades. You know, they have different models, but there's no model with like an i7 processor.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of things that they.
Gosh, really? You think there should be? I wonder.
It could be. It could come at some great premium. I mean, but I think it needs to be there. I mean, I don't know. Surface Pro 2 is okay. It's just, to me, it's the screen. If they just fix that, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. Microsoft blinked again.
Speaking of blinking.
I know.
Again with the blinking.
Yep. Yeah, so the timing of this was pretty funny too. Right before TechEd kicks off, like just maybe 30 minutes before the keynote starts, Microsoft posts a blog post saying, "You know how we told you were going to have to update to Windows 8.1 update before the May patch Tuesday, which is this week? Well, guess what? We're going to give you 30 more days if you're a consumer. We're going to let you wait until the next patch Tuesday in June before you update to update 1."
And presumably, if you're a business user, you've got a lot longer.
You do. You have till August if you're a business user, which isn't a ton of time given, you know, the way that a lot of enterprises test and do a lot of things to prepare for these kind of updates. But still, they already had more time. This is just giving consumers who haven't yet updated to update 1.
Just to be clear, though, for consumers, this is something that happens automatically. You don't really have to.
If you have automatic updates.
It's not like we're asking people to go out of their way and figure out some new complex process to get something done. It's just something that happens, you know.
And if you have 8.0, this doesn't impact you. It's only if you've already updated to 8.1.
Right.
And then you get the automatic update.
Yep.
And that's that. Mm-hmm. Outlook.com has better rules. No spitting on the floor. I actually email to me, my first feature that I look for in email is the ability to do rules. And, you know, the way Gmail does it is weird. They call it filters. Okay. And
labels. Yeah. So Outlook.com already has rules, and they also have something called Sweep, which is
a very nice and simple
interface to rules. So this is more like a power user feature, advanced rules. It's the ability to combine rules for one thing, so it's sort of like aggregating rules.
Must have,
but also just have compound rules that have, it's what you would expect.
If it's from my mom and it doesn't refer to Mother's Day, put it in. That's nice to be able to do that.
Yep,
that's when you really get to be a power, you know, email user. And
this has not rolled out for me, by the way. So my understanding is that it comes over the next couple of days. I still haven't seen it. I should look. Try a different account, but what else is in there? Undo, which is another one of those things. They don't have undo on Sentinel, but it's on a bunch of stuff, and that's pretty good. Inline reply, and that's, you know, exactly what it sounds like. Instead of opening like a new view where you reply. The reply sits above the previous email, so you can kind of do the two things at once. Yeah, I still don't have the new. It's disappointing.
So yeah, they said it's going to roll out in the coming weeks, so you're not.
Yeah,
and
so
not everyone's
what you're showing. I'm sorry, Mary Jo.
This is an automatic rule that was created by Sweep.
So the Sweep and the existing rules interface, that's what you're seeing. What you're seeing is rules. That's just normal rules.
Right. How would I get
the advanced rules is like a pop-up wizard. It looks like a full screen notification.
Yeah, I don't have it.
It's a different interface, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it on either one of my accounts. So
yeah, the current rules are fairly scant. I would like to. Yeah,
you know, they're fine.
For a lot of people, they're enough.
What you can't do is double them up, right?
You need that.
Yeah,
you need conditionals, multiple conditionals. Yeah,
and you can't have rules based on other rules. You know.
Yeah.
So, they're improving it.
Good. 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 That's an area that they could leapfrog Gmail if they really pay attention.
Yep.
Inline reply. That's nice. Undo. What does that mean? Not undo send.
Not undo send, right? Yeah. So, undo delete would be the biggest one.
You know, Outlook Desktop has kind of an undo send.
Recall, full remove.
Recall.
Yeah, but you know what? Does that work for anybody? No. I mean, that has to have Outlook on either end.
You have to have Outlook on both ends. And,
I get so many email messages where it's like, Bob would like to call back his email.
No.
It's like, you know, Bob, I wasn't going to look at that email, but now I think I'm going to see what's wrong with it.
Now I want to look at it. That's the Barbara Streisand effect. Yeah. OneDrive for Business updated with a new web interface.
That's another one I don't have yet. So being updated. There's a couple of big ones. Not big ones. I'm sorry. There's a couple of small things. Like they're putting site folders and recycle bin as links in every view so you can access them very quickly. A lot of people didn't even know there was a recycle bin. So I think that's a good deal. And then they just have this simple controls UI. It's basically a bunch of commands that are in like those gigantic Microsoft fonts that they so often use now. New upload, sync, edit, manage, and share are just prominently displayed in every document view. If you use OneDrive for Business, I used it for the Windows 8.1 book. You know, the web interface is kind of Spartan. It's utilitarian. And so I think they're trying to just make it a little prettier and a little more useful. But again, I don't have this update yet either. So let me check again. But I didn't have it as of last night.
And Link for Android. That's cool.
Yeah, nothing to say there. Just
phones before, right? It was on Android phones. Now it's on tablets.
It's on tablets. Yeah.
It's just bigger.
Yeah.
But you know, a tablet is really the best way to use video conferencing, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just a natural way to do it. All right.
Actually, I do have the OneDrive. Sorry.
For business update.
Yeah. It's pretty.
I'd show it, but I don't have OneDrive for business. So.
Actually, it's dumber than that. That's weird. I have those simple tools I just talked about over there, but the other stuff is not. Hmm. Never mind. It's a little weird.
Never mind. We got some tip at the back of the book coming up. Tip, software pick, enterprise pick, code name, rumors, and beer. The big five. Coming up in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Citrix, who make a product that y'all ought to know about called ShareFile. ShareFile eliminates kind of one of the biggest hazards of email, email attachments. Now, if you're in business, you might say, well, I need email attachments. I can't function without sending that PowerPoint presentation, the document, the contracts, the spreadsheets. Mm-mm-mm. It's dangerous. Bounce back's a problem. You don't control it. You know, when you send something out over the internet, it's out in the open, in the public eye. I think we all know that by now. ShareFile solves that by making it very easy for you to share files with colleagues. Or, and I don't talk about this enough, but it's really cool, get files from colleagues. You can request files. And even if they don't have a ShareFile account, they have a very easy, simple way to send you the file that you're requesting securely, easily. You can control the files that you offer. I should log on to my ShareFile account and show you. I use ShareFile. The ShareFile sync tool makes it very easy for me because I just have to save a file. I do it mostly with audio files. I just have to save that file. Whoops, hello. Log in. I just have to save that file to a folder, a special folder, or two or three. I have several on my desktop. And ShareFile automatically synchronizes them up to my ShareFile store, which you see here. Note a couple of things. First of all, my logo, my company logo, the ShareFile. Same thing when you share a file with somebody. That's what they're going to see. Not the ShareFile logo, but your company's logo. Makes you look like you've got a special file sharing system. The files are all up there, as I said, automatically as soon as I create them. That makes it very easy for me to share a file. Now, I have set up permissions, so I actually have it set up so that the people I share files with regularly will just automatically get an email saying, Leo, put another file in the folder you share. And so you can do it that way. But you can also just say, hey, I want to send a file. Sending it like it's as if it were attached to an email. In fact, if you use the Outlook plugin, it is just like an attachment, except it's not. You can ask for email addresses from your recipients or not. You can say how long the download's good for, when it expires, for how many times they can download it. You'll get a secure link, which makes it very easy. The secure link is attached, or you put it, paste it into an email. And when they click it in their emails, they're going to get this very beautiful, simple page with your company logo, a big download button. If it's multiple files, they'll zip it for you automatically. Makes it very simple. They do not have to have an account. They don't have to really know anything. That's kind of important, frankly. You can't count on your recipients being gurus of technology. ShareFile makes it simple for you, simple for them. Gives you complete control. You'll get email alerts when the files are opened, and on and on and on. I want you to try it. It's really great. ShareFile, free for 30 days. If you would, do me a favor. When you go to the ShareFile site, ShareFile.com, there are a couple of free trials on that website. If you click the one at the top of the page where it says podcast listeners, click here and enter the offer code Windows. That way Paul and Mary Jo get credit for it. Podcast listeners, click at the top of the page, that microphone there, and do enter the offer code Windows so that they know that you heard it on Windows Weekly. Choose your industry too, because ShareFile is HIPAA compliant, compliant with regulations in many industries, including the financial services industry. So if you pick the right industry, they'll fill you in on all of that as well. ShareFile.com. 30 days free. You got to try it. I'm telling you, saved my life. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, they are talking Windows, and it is time for the back of the book. I like to call it the best part. This is the tip of the week.
Yeah, as I do, well, as I do occasionally, because these videos come out occasionally, I guess, I'm just reminding people that it is free and easy to learn how to develop apps for Windows Phone 8.1 now, thanks to the fact that Microsoft's developer tools are free and that Microsoft puts out a new version of its Jumpstart video series for developing apps for Windows Phone every time there's a new version. And so Andrew Wrigley and Matthias Shapiro recorded the new two-day session, which comes out to 23 videos. It's an amazing series, and it will teach you everything you know how to learn to develop apps for Windows Phone 8.1. Kind of a side tip to this is, in the past, if you wanted to get the free developer tools for Windows Phone, you would get something called Visual Studio Express for Windows Phone, and there are separate Express versions for, you know, web, Windows, Windows Desktop. With this version now, you actually get the version for Windows, because the Windows version will do Windows and phone apps, as well as those universal apps that run on both. And so that's kind of a neat thing, but it's also a difference from the way things worked before. And just as kind of another side tip related to Windows Phone 8.1, just today, Joe Belfiore announced that there was a new update for people who had downloaded Windows Phone 8.1 Developer Preview. The theme.
Oh, good.
Yep. I just got my daughter's phone updating, actually. Just to be clear about everything, Windows Phone 8.1, it has RTM'd. It is the final version. Okay. Microsoft told us I can't remember. when was that build or whenever that was?
It was April, yeah, in build.
Yeah, that there would be post-RTM fixes, which occur actually pretty regularly. And then, of course, as these things go up publicly via your wireless carrier, that wireless carrier will add apps to it sometimes. Your handset maker will add firmware and driver updates and apps of their own. And there's all this other stuff that can get tacked onto it. And so in the past, this is the first major version of the OS where we've been able to get this OS right away. And so we've never seen these kind of post RTM fixes arrive, but here it, you know, here's an example of one. And so no new features, but I think Joe said it was bug fixes and battery life improvements. And some people have installed the update, have noticed the battery life has been less. And so hopefully that will mitigate that issue for you.
Cool.
Then on the I actually have three software picks, but I can rattle these out pretty quickly. Actually, that one should have been a tip. But Windows Store on Windows 8.1 with – actually, it's Windows – I think it's Windows 8.1, but let's say Windows 8.1 with Update 1 has something we've never seen before, which is a sort of an out-of-band update, if you will, to the Windows Store app itself. You know, if you think about how Windows works now with all these mobile apps we have, Microsoft can on any day at any time update any of those apps, you know, the mail app, the calendar app, the Xbox music app, whatever. And those app updates go through the store. So how does the store app get updated? In the past, we only got a new version of the store app with a version of the operating system. So Windows 8 came with one, Windows 8.1 came with the last one. And so this is the first time we've ever seen the Windows Store app updated outside of that schedule. And the way that it gets updated, oddly enough, is through Windows Update. It was one of the Patch Tuesday updates. And as much as I actually, there are a lot of apps in Windows 8.1 in particular that I really like. Windows Store has never been one of those apps, but this update improves this app dramatically. I've never felt like they got it right. You know, especially the first version was terrible. The 8.1 version was okay, but I think this is the first one where they've kind of made the store app actually usable and attractive and I think denser with stuff, you know, because it always seemed like this gigantic thing with just a few tiles on it. And anyway, if you just go through your normal Windows Update process, you'll get that. So that's available. Visual Studio 2013 Update 2 has RTM'd, and what that means to you is that's what enables you to get, among other things, universal app abilities in Visual Studio. So if you want to develop apps, if you want to make a solution that has projects for both Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1, you need Update 2 for Visual Studio 2013. And when I was talking about those free tools that are available, the new Express version of Visual Studio for Windows has Update 2 as part of it. And that's what you need to do the universal app stuff. And then finally, I've not even installed this, but I just wanted to throw it out because I know a lot of people are Spotify users. After months and months of delays, Spotify has finally updated its Windows Phone app. This works on Windows Phone 8 and on Windows Phone 8.1. It's much nicer looking. It has a bunch of features that have been available on Spotify everywhere else in the world for months and months and months, but we finally get them now. Spotify Radio recommendation and discovery options and all that kind of stuff. So if you are a Spotify subscriber and a Windows Phone user, no need to be embarrassed anymore. It's I guess I've not tried it.
Now I'm looking at the reviews. Don't be put off by the reviews because these are from the previous version.
Maybe
constantly crashes. Yep. Songs won't play. Yep. Terrible app.
Right. So when the Spotify app first appeared, I want to say last year, honestly, for the day, it wasn't a bad looking app. But it suffered that problem we see so often on Windows Phone, and in that it just didn't get updated. So as the service improved, the app was increasingly out of date. And actually, I think some of the service improvements made the app not work properly as well. So it's nice to see this thing finally get up to date. I've already moved on. I did use Spotify for a while, but I use Xbox Music. So
is that common in the Windows Phone store that they... You know, on iOS, they'll say this review is for a previous a version.
And so, what you're asking me is if the Windows Phone guys are not as sophisticated as the iOS guys in some ways, I think I would have to say, yeah.
It's got to be frustrating for Spotify because 2 weeks ago they updated this app on the 13th, but they're still got reviews for the previous
version. I mean, I think in this one case, we could blame Spotify for taking so long to update it, but fair enough.
But they should say these are reviews for a previous version.
Yep. I think they should segregate them out in some way.
Yeah. And most other stores do that.
And by the way, I think the reason you don't see any reviews for the new version is that Microsoft broke that capability in the store. So we won't talk about that.
But, yeah, because I don't see any reviews since the first.
The new version is much better.
All right. Yeah. Software pick of the week. Now we move to Mary Jo Foley. She is our on-prem gal.
I'm on-prem.
She's on-prem in Houston.
On-prem only.
And she has an enterprise rumor. This is a little new.
Yeah, I decided to mix it up because so many of our previous items on the show today were enterprise rumor. Enterprise picks. I'm like, let me do a rumor. And this is an interesting one I heard in the halls of Houston here. I mentioned earlier that some of the people who are at the show are not happy because Microsoft only talked cloud and did not talk on-prem. And the rumor is Microsoft will be talking about on-prem developments for the IT pros, but not until TechEd Barcelona, which is at the end of October this year. And I've had a couple of people say that's a weird rumor because why would they do that in Barcelona and why wouldn't they have done that here? Well, I think it makes a lot of sense because we believe that Microsoft's going to have some of their Office their new next generation Office servers, like the next version of Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, available possibly in public preview around that time. That also is the rumored time for the Gemini apps, which are the touch first Word, Excel, and PowerPoint apps for Windows 8. So that could be a very interesting show if they decide to line those things up and make them big announcements around that time. So the rumor is, if you're somebody looking for the on-prem updates from Microsoft, you may hear more at the end of October in Barcelona. And I'm going to go to Barcelona this year.
Well, that's the other good news. Now you have a reason to eat paella.
I know.
I'm going to go to Barcelona this year.
Go. I'm going to go. Put it on your budget.
Yeah. You have to because you didn't get any on-premises material in Houston. Right.
I have to be on-prem to see the show.
I got
to
be on-prem.
You do.
We're on-prem.
Our readers demand on-prem.
They do. It's key.
Code names of the week.
Yeah, this week was a crazy week for Microsoft Codenames. There were a whole ton of them launched at the show this week, and references also to some that we already knew. So I'm just going to run through them really quickly, some of the new ones. The one that I had never heard before today before this week, was Atoms. I hear that is the next version of Visual Studio, and that is supposedly going to be a new theme for them because they've been using numbers for their codenames, like VS11, VS12, which actually didn't coincide with the year. Like VS11 ended up being Visual Studio 2012, which was super confusing. So now they're going to go with Mountain Range, supposedly, and Adams is the first, and Baker may be the next after that. So that's one code name, Adams. Another good one to know I mentioned earlier is Fort Knox. That's the encryption feature for Office 365 business customers. What else did we learn about? Maharo was the Azure remote app service. And the reason supposedly it was codenamed Maharo was that some of the development work on that was done in India. And I think it's the Grand Comoros Islands have a town called Maharo on them. That's why they called it Maharo. The last one is Project K. And it seems like some of the developer division is now using single letter code names at Microsoft, which is kind of interesting. We had already heard about Project N, which was .NET native. We heard about that at Build. And the next version of ASP.NET is codenamed Project K. And the K stands for Katana.
Not Project Cortana. Katana.
Not Cortana, Katana, like which was katana?
Yeah, like the sword. Yep.
It was Katana was kind of like Microsoft's interim step towards componentizing ASP.NET. And so that makes sense that this would be Project K. I saw some people calling it Special K as well, but no, it's Project K.
Special K.
Yeah, so there's your bumper crop of code names for the week.
Awesome.
Oh, one more. ExpressRoute that Paul mentioned earlier, which is the new networking capability, the hybrid networking capability, that was codenamed Golden Gate as well. Another one.
All right.
Code names for everyone, one and all.
Well, I guess that leaves only one thing to do. Get drunk with the fancy lawnmower. What?
I know. Isn't that a great name?
Yeah.
The beer pick of the week is St. Arnold Brewing, which is in Houston, their fancy lawnmower. The fancy lawnmower is a Kolsch beer, which is a German-style beer. I'm not a giant fan of Kolsch's, but they're a really good summer beer for people who like...
Because they're a little citrusy, right?
They are fruity. Yeah. And I get to drink this week on tap here in Houston. I actually get to drink a lot of really great Texas beers here while I was here.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. There's a lot of really good breweries here, both in Houston and other parts of Texas. I drank some 512s from Austin that were really good. And that was at our tweet up yesterday at the Flying Saucer. And they have also a really great brewery here called Karbach. Karbach. If you ever see any of their beers, they're fantastic. And I had one of the hoppiest beers I've ever had from them. And it was delicious. It was called Hop Delusion.
My mouth hurts just hearing about that.
Hop Delusion. It would have cured you, Paul. You would have been in Houston if you had drank that.
Nice.
Or maybe not.
Karbach. Well, my friends, the time has come for us to say goodbye. Hard to believe, but once again, we've completed another Windows Weekly episode for the week of May 14th. We'll be back next week, the day after the Microsoft announcement. That should be interesting. See what they announced on the 20th. Paul and Mary Jo will be there. Where would you announce a Rattle and the Hum meetup? Would you do that on your Twitter or
Twitter? Yeah, probably on Twitter.
All right.
Well, I mean, we will be doing it, right?
Yeah, so I think we're going to do that no matter what. Yeah.
But the question
is, it's a matter
when.
Of timing. Yeah. I would think 3 or 4 in the afternoon, it would be.
Just be there.
We'll be there. Yeah.
We'll be there.
Just go to Rattle and Hum. If you're there at 3 and nobody
we'll
else
is. Drag as many of our compatriots down as we can.
Get 10 pitchers and just wait. There will be people.
Yeah, there will be.
Maybe bearing a Surface Pro 3. Who knows?
Man. I would love it if we get some hardware to try out, but I'm wondering.
Do they do that typically?
That's a good question.
Last time they didn't, remember? We didn't get them at the launch of the Surface 2.
Right, that's true. That's true.
Well, there you have it.
Oh, we'll at least be able to touch them, right? I mean, get our hands on them.
We can run off with Panos Panay's Surface again.
Right, distract him while I run. Run, Forrest.
Paul Thorat is at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. And his book, the Windows81book.com. And there's all sorts of other stuff, too. But, you know, if you go to the Supersite, you'll find it all. It's all linked there. A great resource, everybody. Mary Jo is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, a ZDNet blog, where she breaks news daily and tries to bring the stock price up or down, depending on her whim. She is a powerful
person. How am I feeling
person.
Today?
What do I feel like? Up or down? And you can watch this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Wednesdays at twit.tv. Watch live, but on-demand audio and video always made available after the fact at twit.tv/WW, iTunes, Stitcher. What is the podcast? Well, just podcast app on Windows Phone.
Podcast app.
Yeah. And, of course, we have some great apps, including Dimitri Leallen's wonderful Windows Phone Twit app. Those apps make it easy for you to watch anytime, day or night, download files, but also watch live. So whatever your platform, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, make sure you get the Twit apps there. One of them will suit, and you'll be able to watch us whenever you want. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.